Again, I always want to thank everybody for coming out, particularly in this weather. And also particularly because these, a lot of the things that I'm sharing are things that are just sometimes downright uncomfortable, you know, and we don't really want to deal with a lot of it because it's uncomfortable. And I applaud you for coming out and sharing it. And I think uncomfortability is part of the process of growth. We have to kind of sometimes to grow, we got to move into them uncomfortable zones, and then we feel better because we stretched out. You know, I like to stretch a lot. And when you're stretching, you know, you at first it's not comfortable, but after you relax and get into it, you stretch out, and when you come out of it, you know you got more room. You feel like you got more distance within yourself. So some of these concepts of racial unity are somewhat stretching and uncomfortable. And I really do appreciate that we're sharing, because I believe some changes can be made with the right people coming together and discussing some of the right questions and ideas. Today's topic is from revolution to evolution. And I think what I'm going to try to, I'll swing back and forth from the personal to the larger sociological implications of it. And although we know the words, what the words means, I just thought I'd go to the dictionary and just for purpose of greater clarity, read out the definitions as described in the dictionary. Revolution has had two definitions that I liked. The first one was a radical and pervasive change in society and the social structure, especially one made suddenly, often accompanied by violence. The other one was, and this is particularly interesting to me, a procedure or course, as if in a circuit, as back to a starting point in time. That's revolution. Evolution is a process or formation of growth, evolving to a more highly organized state or condition. And I wrote a poem once, and it's got all these, you know, poems, I'm always working them, so the title changed, but the latest title was Black Evolutionary. Back in the 70s, early 60s, it was a tremendous period of change socially. There was a lot of things going on in terms of awakening the consciousness. People were challenging the government in terms of the Vietnam, the racial situation was coming to a peak. Drugs, LSD, shifts in consciousness, all these things were being questioned. And at that point in time, I was going through some changes also. I was moving into what was considered becoming a revolutionary. And a revolutionary at that time was a very, it was a badge of honor. It was, I'm a man, I'm gonna stand, I will not take this anymore. But as I have reflected and gone on, I'm really starting to move into this phrase of becoming a Black evolutionary. Because revolution goes in a cycle, it goes in a circle. It doesn't go anywhere, it just keeps going around and around. Evolution is more on a spiral. It goes upward. It advances. It progresses. I like to share with you just some of the things that happened in the course of my life that shaped me to go from being a revolutionary consciousness to an evolutionary consciousness. I grew up in the projects. Public housings, and we went to a Catholic grammar school, and my parents were, I guess, you know, the foundation for a lot of the character. And at one point, I don't know if you're familiar with, in Catholic Church, they have confirmations, and we had just moved from one place on the south side to this place further out south, a public project. And I didn't quite know how to get to the school where I used to go this was my confirmation day from where I had just moved to. So I got on this bus that I thought was going to take me to the confirmation ceremony. And I guess I must have been, I don't know, confirmation, maybe 9 or 10. And it turned out to be my first encounter with racism, first actual encounter with racism. When I got on the bus, I asked the bus driver, was this the bus that would take me to St. Anselm's, which was my school? And he acted very strange. He just kind of mumbled and told me to go sit down. So, you know, I was told to be polite to adults, and so I just went and sat down. As the bus progressed, it took a turn which I knew was going away from the direction that I wanted to. So I'm in my confirmation suit, I'm running late, I don't know where I'm going, it's a new neighborhood and I'm feeling kind of out of sorts. So I went to the bus driver and I asked him, I said, excuse me sir, is this the way to St. Anselm's? And he was very annoyed, you know, and I didn't understand his annoyance. And so I was standing there, and the bus just kept speeding up into place of more and more unfamiliar territory. And I said, excuse me, sir, I want to get off. And he acted very angry, and I couldn't understand it. I didn't know where it was coming from. And I kept asking, can I get off? Can I get off? And he just would not acknowledge me. And so finally, I'm standing at the place where you stand to get off, and the door's open. And the bus kept speeding. Now I'm standing there getting more terrified about going into a place where I have no idea where I'm going. I'm late. I need to get off this bus because it just doesn't feel right. And the bus is just speeding up. And it sped up and sped up. And then it started to slow down a little bit. But it wasn't stopping. And so I just got off the bus. And of course, if you ever get out of a moving bus, you know, the ground comes alive, you know. And I stepped off this bus, and my feet went out from up under me, and my concern was, don't get the confirmation suit messed up. It was kind of like this kind of rainy kind of day and all this stuff. And I just start stumbling forward, you know, and trying to keep my distance. And I looked up, and it was this park bench. It looked like it was coming at me. I was moving so fast. And I bounced off of it and landed in all this kind of grassy, muddy thing, trying to hold myself. And I got up and I was brushing myself off, just trying to figure out, well, what's going on here? I looked up and the bus driver was sitting on the bus, and it was all whites on the bus at the time. And he was just laughing, he was cracking up. And I looked to the other people on the bus to try to see, what is this? What's going on? And some of them were laughing, some of them were looked away like, I don't even want to acknowledge that this is happening. They were just whatever. And it felt like the world turned upside down, you know. I had no reference points prior to that to understand what was happening. But that was my first encounter with racism. And then when I went, you know, I finally got to the confirmation, which at a certain point in the ceremony, the priest slaps you. It's a little slap to kind of symbolic indication that you will be a soldier for God. But I remember being slapped, and all of a sudden, you know, it had a whole different significance to me, you know. So if I could pick out a little bit of a turning point, that was a turning point in my life. As time went on, you know, I started to read and become aware of more of the larger implication of racial situations and what was happening. The Times were saying it, and I got involved with a group of people who were in a revolutionary mode. As I went further on, there was a person that we known had gotten jumped on by the police. At this time, there was a situation happening where the blacks and the police were in direct adversarial war. I mean, whatever. Those had been a lot of police brutality, and whites and blacks were sniping on the police, and the tension was real great. And we were driving around, and at that time, if you had an afro or if you just looked like it, you were subject to arrest. So they stopped us and started harassing us, and we got into this big old fight or whatever. And it just deepened me into this revolutionary mode, to this mode of reactive hate. I'm kind of digressing, but I'm just giving this little story. It's interesting how one person at the right time, in the right mode, can change things. I was riding a bus, and me and a few other of my friends who were black were on the bus, and we were really reinforcing each other's animosity about the situation. And there was a saying in that time among blacks, if there was ever confrontations with the police, whatever, that it was like a war cry. Well, kill me. Like, I don't care. Just kill me, you know. And we were talking to this guy. He was a white guy. Ed reminds me a little bit of him, but a younger. And we were pretty imposing. I mean, as blacks, we were angry. We were clearly in the revolutionary mode. And the guy, he didn't show any fear. That was the first thing that I noticed. And he kept saying, there's more to life than that. Yeah, you're right, but that's not all of it. Something to that effect. And I don't know why, but that clicked. Something clicked. Now, you know, I had come up Catholic, and my parents were always telling me that people are people. So that was a foundation. But it clicked. And I started to realize that I could not burn the energy of hate. That for me to stay in the mode, I had to be constantly in a hate mode. And so I started to change, and from a revolutionary to evolutionary. The evolutionary process. Let me read a little bit here. I just wanted to, before I digress too much. Virtually any African American that you see who enjoys being black, takes pride in being black, is comfortable with his blackness without feeling superior or inferior to whites, is a black evolutionary. For he or she has had to evolve or grow through personal and pervasive racism. African Americans have to make an often conscious choice between reactive hate and progressive love. And they often have to renew that choice regularly to stay in that state of non-hate. There's a poem here that I want to read to you about that. It's called Love Strong. It starts off with a saying, there is no spot where God is not. There is no space devoid of his grace. And if God is love, then there is no spot where love is not. There is no space devoid of love's grace. It is said that we are free to the degree we can love the person we hate the most. It's all a matter of degree. But it ain't easy, because you got to be strong, love strong. And this is a poem. It's not a great poem, but some of the ideas in it, I think, are good. Love strong. I am strong, strong enough to love while being hated, strong enough to reach out for and be rejected by, to open up to and be shut down on, strong enough to wait patiently for the yes and smile warmly at the no, strong enough to mold my mind to fit your heart, to search for life and finding death, to move on again to find life, strong enough to do right in the midst of wrong, to go to hell and back while singing my soul strong. Strong enough to come up from under raising thunder. Oh, I'm strong enough. Strong enough to bite the dirt, eat the earth, and spit forth a new birth. I'm strong, love strong. I'm strong enough, I'm love strong. So, you know, that poem is kind of what I think a lot of people have to come to in terms of reacting to the racism. They have to consciously make a choice to move towards love. And I think that what's happening now is that a lot of people are moving, blacks are moving towards that state, and it's very important that they connect with whites who are also moving towards that state. I'm looking for the day, you know, where we don't even have to identify ourselves as black or whites. And I generally don't even think in this mode, and I don't even deal on these topics a whole lot, except that one of the things I wanted to share was some of the experiences so that you could also understand some of the experiences and help you in terms of dealing with it. So the process of evolution is definitely a process that incorporates spirituality. You have to start looking at people as people, and more than that, as people as sparks of divinity. I think that on this side of it, the greater challenge is for us Afro-Americans to start to separate the institutional racism and the pervasiveness in terms of people being people. And so so that's kind of what I want to share. Does anybody have any questions before I move on regarding this?
Dan?
Yeah.
Were you alone in this transition? Were you able to share this with, say, family or friends of these guys you were with? Or is this a personal journey, which it is, but,
right.
You know.
When you say alone, you mean in terms of this the
being
incident?
Able to share and to say what you were going through with your parents, for instance, or friends, or you know, colleagues. And
I was somewhat angered at my parents because I felt they didn't prepare me for that situation. I don't hold that animosity to them, but then I was, why didn't you tell me that this was out here in the world, that this was what was happening? Later on, it's funny how people will come together with intensity when there's an issue about anger and hate, a lot more so than about positive issues. So I would share the feelings of the revolutionary ideology among, there's enough people out there who would definitely say yes, you know, mm-hmm. You know, whites are this and whites are that and this or that. as times went on, I got connected with some African American drummers, and these were drummers who were going back to the original African heritage in terms of that strength of coming from the motherland or whatever. They would cut down these trees and give libations to the spirit of the tree or whatever, and then make these drums. And they were in a very deep spiritual cultural thing about what it was to be African, African American. But they were tipping into going to the point of superiority. And it was often the discussion, you know, that there's going to be a righteous retributions for blacks, and then whites will be the ones who will have to be oppressed and dogged. And I remember sitting at the house in the kitchen and thinking, and you have to realize that this was a period when I really hadn't moved into the mainstream in terms of relating to a lot of other Europeans and whites. And I was sitting there and just thinking, I said, well, it just doesn't make sense to me that this is this vicious cycle. Is it that we get oppressed and then we become the oppressor, and then they become the, and they get on top and then they oppress us. It says somewhere, you know, it just seems like there has to be a break in this cycle of a revenge, of control, you know, and that's the point of the revolution. The revolution just keeps, you know, generations, and then this people are on top, and then they rebel and they can work, then the other people are on top. And I said, I don't think that the Creator, you know, it was a good thing because the people I was engaged with have moved into a definite spiritual thing, and we talked about the Creator, and the Most High was the term we used. I said, it doesn't seem like the Creator would want this kind of a system set up. And it was those conversations, even though they were steeped in African pride and sometimes even African superiority, that I started to change my ideology. And it is always amazed me that when you start to go through a transition, how confirmations come from just unexpected places, you know. Like the gentleman on the bus that came up. To answer your question, I was sharing that process with them, but I was somewhat of a maverick. I was somewhat in the group. Interestingly enough, now a lot of those people have also evolved and are also moving out into the greater community and sharing, you know. So that was happening. So it was a very at the same time painful process to go through that discovery of that there's a racial situation out here, and also a kind of a beautiful process of as you evolve, you meet people who give you confirmation, yes, you know, you're on the right path. And one of the deepest things that I realized personally, it takes a tremendous amount of energy to sustain hate. You know, it really is, it is a definitely a fuel that beats on you. And I was into it for a while. When I got into it with the police, I had been in martial arts for years, and I had so much energy, I had so much anger, that I literally was beaten up on the police. I mean, it was not defensive at all. And eventually there were so many, but I didn't feel any pain. I felt purged in a sense, purged in the battle. And they took me and they handcuffed me and they started to beat me. And I didn't feel it. I just said, "You can't hurt me. You can't hurt me." And it created a challenge. And they would this and that. But you know, as time went on, as my attitude changed, I ran into some and have friends of some of the most beautiful people, of policemen, who have done, I mean, just some incredible things in terms of reaching out. So that was a process of going from revolution to evolution. And in a societal type of way, that's what I see what's happening now. I see that there's a chance of evolving from that reactive, they did it, we're going to do it, revengeful thing, to an evolving of coming together, you know. And it's really a testimony to the energy here and people of all nationalities that are coming together, that first they had that spirit, and then that they can discuss these things, and that spirit is the security of letting those things be discussed without it being considered an assault or a guilt or anything like that. So, any questions? My ear is stopped up. I feel like I'm talking in this cave. It's really weird.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Damn it.
Yeah.
You were wondering what's going to happen if the Bulls win the basketball.
Yeah.
And that sounds like revolution.
Mm-hmm.
What happened when the Dallas Cowboys won, sound like a revolution. Mm-hmm. What happened in Los Angeles sound like a revolution. And what's happened these last 10 or 15 years, is there real optimism in the evolutionary people right now, or are they afraid that they might revert to revolution?
What has happened with the Dallas Cowboys? Excuse me, but I've heard somebody say that before.
Well, they won the pro championship, and then in the celebration in Dallas, it became more like a riot.
A riot after the game?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So they're afraid of that with Chicago, too, if they win the NBA? Well, Chicago, you know, last time it, that happened, there was a riot. I mean, you can call it a riot. Yeah, there was a reaction. It was it's supposed to be in a solitary mode, but it was a riot, you know. Ooh. You know, to answer your question, my experience is that two things happen, and this always concerns me, is when good people go out, and this poem about being love strong, go out who are in an evolutionary mode, who are trying to change and better things, they run up on some people who are in a very reactive mode. And like you were saying, that you know, you went forth and you went to this group and these black sisters, you, and
yeah,
even
what happened in the 60s.
Yeah. And even though you were open and trying to whatever, it's just an overload, you can't deal with it. People run up to, and that's why I said I have to applaud both blacks and whites, because blacks or whites run into those reactive things. And if you're not really rooted in the principle of why this is right, it can throw you back into a reactive, revolutionary hate mode. The Klan are between the sophistication of their recruitment now and people who have tentatively reached out and tried to grab somebody's hands and then got overwhelmed with whatever, a bad situation or whatever. They're candidates for Klan recruitment, you know. But you do or no?
I don't.
Well, in other words, okay, let's say you and all good intentions are trying to do something, you go somewhere, let's say you get raped. Mm-hmm. By some blacks, or you get
join the Klan?
Well, not you necessarily, but I'm saying if you don't understand, separate the particular incident from the greater situation that's happening, that's kind of a powerful thing to not be affected by and not be have your spirit darkened from it. You know what I mean? And I think that's what happens now, because people are trying to reach out and they're bumping up on people who a lot of times discourage them, you know. So, you know, for me, you know, I'm real clear about it. You know, people say, well, what happens if whites done this and that? Well, I'm just clear. I'm not going back that way, because I understand from principle the futility of it, you know. And something my parents said when I was a kid, people are people. There's good and bad in all of us. And although I recognize that there is a system of things that is bad, that I don't get, I don't think I'm gonna be swayed. You know, if I was to go somewhere and get jumped on by a group of whites or whatever, it would be those whites who jumped on me. It wouldn't be whites are bad. And I think it's really important. I'm very sitting here and talking in this group, and I guess this is the theme I've been trying to carried through the last three sessions, listening to the sacred, is I feel very good about the energy that's here and about the ability to communicate. It makes me feel very optimistic about it. And I'll share something honestly. When I came here, to tell you how much still I have to grow, the first night I came here, and it was from two reasons. When I went, I automatically locked my door. Now, part of that, and I just reflected, I'm in a reflective mode today, part of that, the most part of that, because that's the thing you do in Chicago, because you don't know what's happening. But if I'm honest, and if I can share this honest with you, a part of me was saying, well, you never know, there may be somebody out here who's just maybe be a little crazy, or, you know, whatever. And but you know, that's something that I don't think is a major thing. But I think in each of us, you know, there is that fear, there is that concern or distrust that doesn't allow us to really stretch out. You know, and I think we have to honor some of that. I think there's a point between being idealistic and being naive, and I would rather you be a little more cautious and not get a situation where you then become turned off. I just hear, I see a lot of evolution happening, and those people come together, and that's where the reinforcement is of the movement. Yeah.
Is there a process or processes, techniques, something that you see to go beyond someone asking, are you male, female, black, white, gay, straight, to just being, no, I'm a human? That's the only category I'm going to be listed as.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I'll say this. Let me give you kind of a long answer because it strikes some thoughts. As I said, I generally don't even talk or think in these terms. You know, I don't think in terms of I got some white friends. I don't really think in those terms, and I haven't for a while. I kind of have to now to identify the subject matter, the topic, but it's not. I had a period in my life I had a relationship that broke up over a period of years, and I went into kind of just a period of being with myself, and it struck me that that you know, each of us has that spark of divinity, that little divineness or whatever, and for just a short period, you know, I would be addressing that. If I saw somebody, I would be addressing that. And the personality and everything else peripheral to that just didn't matter. And it was a very happy period. I just felt really at one with everybody, you know. And it didn't matter. So I don't know, you know, I slip in and out of that. But for me, is if I just realized that this is really an illusion here. And that there really is, which is great that Illinois Bell, we're all connected. It really is, we really are just energy and little different vessels. And it is not about the gender in one sense or the color of the skin. That's what I do, you know. And if I get off too much, I think about it, that we're just, you know, it's like if you take water from the ocean and you pour it in different cups. You know, well, it's all the same water. It's just in these different looking cups, you know. And that's just what I do personally. That helps me, you know. So I don't know.
And I don't think evolution is automatic, but I think we need to be recognizing the evolution that's going on. For example, in the southern part of the United States, in my lifetime, I have seen the most marvelous evolution in this race question. Mm-hmm. I mean, the vast majority of Southerners today have a diametrically opposite view of the other races than they had when I was a child.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I think it's really important for two reasons, so that you don't get down and depressed, and I really want to try to lighten the feeling of this whole dialogue discussion. Is one thing is really to affirm, acknowledge, and confirm the successes. You know, this is a success. This is a success. Sitting here talking, it's a success. And we have to energize the successes that we have. We have to acknowledge them, that there is something afoot here, something is moving, that we're talking, you know, that we're getting beyond the trappings of this pigmentation situations, you know. And the other thing as we were discussing, that there really is, for me, a fun element. I mean, there is really something fun and joyous about being able to sit down and talk about weighty discussions in a non-adversarial, inclusive, looking for the better way or answer situation. To me, I mean, and we're sitting here and it's kind of like heavy, but to me, it's actually, it has a joyous overtone because it is movement, it is progressive, you know. And so to realize that it is a process, to realize that, to acknowledge the successes, and to tune into the fun or joyous aspect of it, you know. So I guess I'm just saying yes, it's true, you know. And something you said, we didn't finish our conversation yesterday when you were saying, you were talking about a very personal thing, and you mentioned, he says, and your people, and part of me went like that,
and,
you know.
And when I said, I didn't know how to describe it, I didn't know how to express it, and
right.
I felt the same thing.
Yeah.
I was very, I felt very awkward. How do I talk about it?
Yeah.
Do I say blacks? What do I say?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, but you know, part of me went like that, but behind that, I knew that your intent was from a good place. So it didn't stick, you know. It's not like, well, you people, this and that. No, I knew that it was that you were struggling to express something and was trying to find the thing. And I think it's important.
How could I say anything without offending you? I didn't know how.
No, I wasn't really offended.
I mean, I know.
Because your intent, it preceded the word in a sense, and it was okay. But there was a part of it. I just wanted to address it because I think it's important.
I didn't like it either.
Yeah, but I think it's important, you know, that as much as we can deal with specific things that may trigger things wrongly, so that you know, because I may say something or do something.
Tell me what I might have said.
I'm trying to remember the context. You know, that African Americans, I guess, would be, you know, that blacks, you know, it's. You know, it's funny. It's sometimes it's, we have to go to the intent because we are groping for these words. And people was, I told people this. I said, I have heard whites call me a nigger with less maliciousness and love than I've heard other whites call me Mr. McNeil. You know, and if you get somebody from the South who was saying it because of, well, that's what they say. They're not, it's not really, I mean, you want to educate and let people know, well, that's, you know, but it was not in a malicious way, you know, and it was in a habitual way, you know. But I've been called Mr. in a proper way when you knew this person really didn't like you, you know. And so it's important that, you know, we weed out those little technicalities that create divisions. But it's as important, more important, that we give some regard to the spirit in which it was said, and so we don't react to a slip in the tongue about something, you know.
Well, obviously, Dan, you have grown and come a long ways, it sounds to me like, since you first adventured at racism. But there are so many people out there, and I don't know about the rest of the group, but as myself, I'm like Howard. What do you say that's not going to offend, and how do you know that you're not offending, no matter how great your intent is? I mean, who are you speaking to? How do we know which group we're speaking to,
mm-hmm.
that we can say these things and not mean to hurt?
Mm-hmm.
And yet, as you say, you still cringe when you heard it.
Mm-hmm.
But you could see the deeper intent.
Right,
is
right.
That, does everyone see that deeper intent, or do they take it personal?
Well, you know, I think, you know, it's a balance between, you know, between, I said, the spirit and the actual vernacular to use. I mean, in this situation, I think, you know, you would just say Africans or African Americans. I mean, it would be the most important things. And for every situation, there's probably a better way or a best way of saying it, you know. In terms of it kind of rests on there's a lot of confusion now because it's a transition, so everybody's kind of sensitive to things, you know. For me as a male, try not to be sexist and or harassing. It just do I open the door or don't open the door, you know? we're just in a transitory position, you know? And I find it very hard. My sister called me a male chauvinist. I said, me? Well, you know, whatever. And then you have to, you know, search yourself and say, well, is there some of that stuff in there? And I guess, you know, the group that is feeling offended, if it's in transition, you know, it a lot of times it's not sure, you know, a lot of women are not sure, well, should you open the door or don't open the door? And so if they don't know, how can you know? You know. But I think that with the black situation, although there's people who are still in transitions and emotional about that, I think just call them, you know, by their name. Or if it's a group, you know, African Americans or whatever, you know. I mean, we went through a whole thing. I got a thing from being, first we were, we were niggas, and then we got better, and we were colored, and then we didn't like being called colored, and then we were Negroes, and then Negroes wasn't enough, so then we became black, and then black wasn't really tied into the geographic origin, so we were Afro-Americans, and there's no Afro nowhere, so we became African-American. And you know, and if you go to the other side and look at people who are trying to follow you and relate to you, they go, I mean, what are you there? You're Africa, or you're Negroes, or what do you want to be, you know? And it creates that confusion. But I think that we finally arrived, at least in that sense of the name situation. And I think for most people, that's what they prefer, you know. Most African, but I'll say black and I'll say African American sometimes. And so it's one of those. So any other questions? How much time do you got? Oh, just about another 10, 15 minutes. I want to talk about another little story that happened, you know, and it just dealt with the trust thing. I used to work on an ice cream truck, and it just shows you how things compound on things. And I worked this whole summer, and I was hoping to, you know, take a little money and get some things. And this guy, you know, I'm like about nine years old, and this guy was an ice cream truck, and he always said, well, I'll pay you next week. And well, you work the summer and I'll give you all this money at the end. You know, and I guess I just wasn't that swift. Or I guess maybe because I just believed, adults, I just didn't think about it. So I came in the last day of the summer, skipping in to get my money that I worked for all summer, and he had left. He wasn't, And so, you know, it you have to almost go back into those spots where you've had your run-ins and make peace with it and clear it up. Because they stay there and they tent your relationships. Because that put a thing about trusting, right? You can't trust, boy, you know, can't trust whites, boy. They, you know, and sometimes it's just that little ice cream thing. I have to say, no, that's that, you know, and that was that person to rid myself of the demon of that situation, you know. So, you know, it's a situation that I think we're all working with in terms of our own situations. Do any of you have experiences? Have you had any bad experiences with blacks that kind of made you think, oh boy, those people, you know?
I've had a lot of good and bad, but I'd like to know how you're black churches are dealing with this question for the whites. I mean by that, it seems to me that somehow our churches need to understand that to be a Christian is to have a reverence for all persons.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I think the black churches have an awful lot to teach the white churches, because you've combined piety with social concern, mm-hmm. and we haven't.
Mm-hmm.
Very well.
Mm-hmm.
But how do you deal with this toward whites? Do you find a way? Do you preach that the gospel means a reverence for all persons?
Yeah, I think, you know, I think by and large, the black churches, and in fact, I think by and large, Indians, I feel the two that I have some connections or feelings or information or experience with, is that the blacks, churches and blacks and Indians, by and large, are always inclining themselves towards including all people in terms of the experiences. Their general mode is one of inclusion. It's the concern you find it in black churches that there may be some concern about the social issues in terms of unifying blacks so that they can have a voting bloc or they can gain some kind of political power or those kind of things. But by and large, I think most African Americans just want to have peace and include and be an inclusive things, you know. There was a movement, Marcus Garvey, and then there's other movements of separations that when you see a black revolutionary or somebody, you've seen somebody who's come at the end of their ropes generally. Somebody says, well, I've tried this, I've tried that, we tried to integrate, we tried peace, we tried this, it ain't working, I'm gonna get my gun, or I'm getting out of here, or give me my own state. They've come to the end of their rope, they feel like, you know. But what you will find, I think this is true for Indians, they never had a concept of this is my land. I mean, how do you own the land? I mean, you can't own this land. This is the Creator. This is the Great Spirit's land. How do you say that? And a lot of it was just sharing. It was only after the concept of ownership and territorialness came in that they started to say, well, wait a minute now. But I think with just a little bit of encouragement, you will find that most African Americans and Indians and most people would are thinking about it in terms of inclusive, you know. Now, what you do have the distrust. You do, based on the our history of relating to each other, you do have people who are cautious and leery of a group of people, you know. But the general mode is, you know, can't we just, you know, live together, you know. So that's what I see, and the churches have been a real buttress in the black community in terms of keeping the spiritual awareness alive among black people, and most black churches teach that God is an inclusive God, you know. That it's not an exclusive God, you know, and most black churches would take reference to any ideology that says a separate, you know, but there are exceptions to that, but generally speaking, that's the mode, you know. Yeah.
Being a great sports fan, and I look at the dominance of all sports now by the black people, and I've heard stories that maybe because of their bone structure that they're more natural athletes.
Mm-hmm.
Or is it maybe because to get ahead and to make the money that they work harder at it? Do you have any
You know, it's amazing how these questions have come up. Our questions that I was thinking about walking around, walking here, you know. It's like we're kind of tied in, you know, here. I mean, I was thinking about, because, you know, I'm into a lot of physical things. I think one reason there's a lot of the boxers, like boxers have been, you know, whatever, is that blacks have just had to fight. I mean, they just have had to fight, and so that's what they do, you know. And the same with the basketball and stuff. It's like, well, if this is all I got to work with, I'm gonna try to max this out. Now that's good in the sense of, you know, achieving that area, but it's limiting in the sense of the other possibilities. And one of the things that's so sad about racism is that all the possibilities of input and contributions that don't happen. I mean, we don't know how many black Einsteins or physicists or doctors or whatever that may have the answer to this or that don't come forth because of the institutional racism. But the question of blacks in terms of their abilities, in terms of athletic abilities, I think, and this may be controversial, but I personally think it's twofold. I think it's the area that they work in and allowed to achieve so that they max out. And I have a theory that that each race has something special as a contribution to the whole to give. That we all, you know, like each individuals, and that there may be some kind of a gift given in terms of rhythm or athletic ability. And this gets real touchy. But it balances out because I just think that every race, if you can. And that's the part about keeping the identity and the diversity alive and well, that we all bring something, that the Creator has given us each some kind of special ability, but it's not for self-glorification so much as a race, but it's for the, you know, it's for bringing it to the human table, that we all want to bring this particular things. And one of the things that happens when you shy away from a particular person's ability or a particular race's ability is you might be moving away from that quality as part of the overall contributions. But I just something I'm just working through. I don't know. It's just a thought, you know. But it just seems like certain races have certain natural tendencies or abilities, you know. And, you know, if one race is good at organizing or bringing this out and other races, then we just all benefit from each of those talents, you know. And in the best possible world, each of those talents would be brought forth and we'd all benefit from them without it being an ego thing, or what do you call ego in sort of race? Racial ego? I don't know. You know. So so that's a good question, but I don't know if I have the answer to it. But I do know that we know it's a part, it's because that's what we focus on. When I grew up, I was playing a lot of basketball. I was playing basketball. I haven't played any now, but that's all you did. You couldn't go anywhere. You couldn't do anything. And if you notice the sports that blacks achieve in are sports that don't require a lot of outlay of capital. I mean, you don't see a lot of great black polo players, but we not buying too many horses. But give us a basketball, a baseball, or put on some gloves. Anyway, that doesn't cost anything. And as you look, I mean, in terms of as it gets into the outlay of capital, it diminishes in terms of our what's the word, dominance or area of effectiveness, you know.
Yeah. I was just going to say the city that I grew up in, we had some really great basketball teams, and they were mainly from a school that had more blacks going to it, and so all of the players were black, but we as parents and the coaches, we were sitting and kind of looking over, you know, the history of why this happened in our city. And it's because the blacks being lower income, their summers,
they went to the park and they played basketball all the time. Mm-hmm. And then when we had winter activity night, you know, the blacks, you know, these same kids were there playing basketball in the gymnasiums. Mm-hmm. And so it was, I mean, whereas the white kids, you know, the upper income kids, they were going to camp and they were going on vacations and doing other things. Mm-hmm. And this is all, you know, that the black community had. And they put forth, you know,
the energy, and the energy in them.
And
you see the beauty of that because, you know, we will get the accolades in terms of being able to play basketball. But then, you know, I mean, the other side of that is, you know, what is lost, you know? I mean, in that process of just that particular area, you know? You know, and even in that, you know, you see just now you're starting to see a lot of coaching, you know. I mean, how long was it before we had a black quarterback or black coaches? You know, it's like you can play, but you're not going to manage. You know, you can play, but you're not going to own. You know, you can play, but you can't be a quarterback. I mean, let's get serious. You know, I want to do a thing on Malcolm X. I don't know if anybody saw the movie, but the topic was about his evolution of consciousness. And people, I guess, revere or fear or hate Malcolm for different reasons. But he was somebody who really went through changes of growth. And at the end of his life, he came to a realization of the people of it's the consciousness, it's where people are at. But there was at one point where he was in school, and he was the president, he was in this all-white school, and he said, I want to be a lawyer. And the teacher says, Malcolm, you know, let's be realistic. That's not a thing for a black to be a lawyer. Now you can make little things in wood shop, you know, be a carpenter. Christ was a carpenter. You know, you gotta be realistic, Malcolm. And then you could almost see this thing kind of go like, I want to be a lawyer, and then you see kind of, you know, drop, you know, put that ceiling on him. You know, and that sin that was put on him, when he got from under it, and he got into the Muslims, that I would think that part of that resentment and that rage was what came out. You know, it was responding. That the incident happened in my past in terms of the bus, the incident in his life. When he came out, he found his revolutionary force. I would think this part of that force was that being told you can't. You don't do that, you know, and so there's a lot of anger, there's a lot of energy, and I heard something once I always thought was great. It says any emotion not expressed is a negative emotion, and one of the things that we really got to do, I think, is be able to, in a secure setting, to express this anger, to get this anger out, you know, and not in a point in the way, but just to get it out, because that anger, like there's a great saying that this actress, Rebecca Mornay, she says, that's what I heard her say, she says, I've said it in another class, so, you know, you don't bury feelings, you know, dead, you bury feelings alive, you know, and so there's all these feelings that are within blacks in terms of the history, and it has to get out. And we got to find a constructive way to get it out. And a lot of it's dialogue, you know. And I'm sure there's feeling in whites in terms of resentment, in terms of quotas, you know. We got to get it out. And I think the more we can sit down and get together and talk, then the better it is, because we're able to vent it out. And you got, then you cleanse, your spirit is rinsed, you know.
And I suspect that since the great heroes for most white children today in baseball, football, and basketball are blacks, when those children grow up, it's going to be harder for them to discriminate against those that were their heroes as children. I mean, it seems to me that in time, that will open doors for lawyers and others, because our heroes in Seattle, Ken Griffey Jr., man.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
He's the greatest.
Yeah, it's really important to acknowledge the successes and the progress, and you know the duality of that is, you know, you know, people who will say, well, you haven't, it's not enough, and we need more and all that. And that's, it's, I mean, there's a progression of things, but I think it's important to look at the successes and the possibilities, you know. I do believe, you know, what you see is what you get, and I think we need to look at that, you know. So, I felt like I did more talking than I did discussing here, a discussion, but it was good. So again, I thank you, and I think it's great that we're talking. Amen. I really do.